Code Fun Podcast Network.
This podcast is brought to you by our friends at Linode. Whether you're working on a personal project or managing your enterprise's infrastructure, Linode has the pricing, support, and scale you need to take your project to the next level. Get started on Linode today by going to linode.com/remoteruby.
This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
What's up?
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing, just replacing Andrews since our other Andrew can't be on time. We have Andrew Famara with us today. Andrew, I don't usually give introductions, but I know Andrew well enough that I think we're gonna try and do this. So Andrew is my coworker at Podia, friend not only to me, but also to Chris Oliver and white tank top Andrew Mason. And Famara, why don't you fill in the gaps, what I left out?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. I get the honor of working with Jason at work. Yeah, that just defines my life. So we'll just go with that for now, you know?
Take it. You've got some other cool things. You've got App Locale. You've got a course on learning Rails, building, is it Instagram from scratch?
Yeah, it walks you through building Instagram with the new Rails 6 stuff, like active storage and a little bit of action cable. It tries to give you an introduction to the basics of Rails. And then, yeah, I've recently launched App Locale, which is an app to help you manage your Ruby on Rails translations. So hopefully more people can translate their apps. But that's what I've been up to.
Very cool. Andrew Mason, welcome.
What's up?
Last weekend, what kind of prompted Andrew Famara joining us today? Chris and Andrew spent the weekend launching a tool called Rails Bytes, and Chris mentioned it would be cool to have Andrew on the show to talk about it. So, do one of y'all want to maybe explain what Rails Bytes is and how you guys got into building it last weekend?
Also, shout out to Andrew for being like one of the first Go Rails subscribers and like longest time. He's probably maybe the longest subscriber I've ever had. So big shout out for that. But yeah, we've worked on Jumpstart for Go Rails and templates in Rails for a long, long time. And we were talking about like making something reusable, like Nate Berkopek tweeted about, and the Rails May of WTFs was kind of another place that was bringing up Rails templates need quite a bit of love. There's a lot of potential to them, but and we discovered some ideas that as we were building it, we were like, wow, you know, we could do this, and we didn't even realize. Like Andrew had the idea of like we could build a Rails app template that triggers other templates, which is pretty fun. So we just sat down and hacked together that weekend and got it done, which was fun.
Very cool. Yeah, I wrote a blog post about this, but I was sitting down to work on Hope Grid. I had like 3 hours that I was allotted by my wife. And I spent 2.5 of those writing Rails Bytes templates because you sent it to me right as I sat down and I thought it was really cool and got nothing done that weekend.
It's kind of how we felt. We like dove in and put the first version together, and then it was like, oh, but we could do this and this and this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And here's another idea.
It was really interesting too, because when we finally launched it, I spent the next like, feels like 2 days just refreshing and seeing what everybody else was adding. And just like to see that take off was kind of just crazy.
Yeah, I still check it once every couple of days to see what people have added. There are some really cool ones. And when you say like, when you're talking about how you kept getting ideas for like building it, that's how I felt using it too. Like every time I sit down and write a template, I would like be like, oh, it would be cool if it did this. But what if this template also did this? It's like, it's a very cool that from the inception of the project all the way to people using it, like it's sparking so many ideas. So it's cool.
Yeah, I agree. Because there's some things that are like, okay, if you install Shrine or, you know, Sidekick or something, that is going to require you to add the gem, obviously, but then you got to go configure it and make decisions about how you want to configure it. And that's where Rails templates like really shine because it's interactive. So it can sit there and ask you, you know, how many workers do you want? Do you want Sidekick to power Rails active job? You know, Shrine is an example that would be really interesting to have a complex Rails template to install because it has so many different options. You can go and have direct uploads, uploading through a URL, you know, transcoding videos or resizing images all have different configuration things. And your installation process could be a Rails template instead of a README, which I think is probably one of the more interesting discoveries I think Andrew and I found when we were working on this, because we started building a few templates like install devise and whatever. But then we realized like it can be interactive and then it can walk you through all of the stuff and you wouldn't necessarily have to spend hours fiddling with the README and the docs trying to figure out exactly what you need, which I think is really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think providing a way for gem authors and owners to say like, hey, here's an automated walkthrough of like how to install this Ruby gem and how to use it in your models or your controllers or whatever it is, will like greatly increase or decrease the friction to using a gem. Like there are some gems out there that I look at the installation process and I'm like, I don't want to get into this, but being able to use the templates kind of like reduces that barrier. And that's one of the things I found when I was working on my own gem for App Locale is like, you have to have a configuration file, but I don't really want to describe that in the README because that's kind of hard to describe. Like, hey, you have to make a configuration file and make it look like this. So why don't I just make like a Rails byte and say, hey, what's your project ID? What's your API token? And then I wrote the config file for you. Great. Here's how you use the gem. That's kind of the power and like for gems. But you can also do crazy, more complex things like we can technically turn the Jumpstart free like template that you would run when you create a new Rails app. We could turn those into smaller bytes and then say like install devise, add a model and controllers and stuff that lets you make announcements in your app or in stuff like that. So it's, I don't know, the potential is there. It's just, there hasn't been a lot of good examples out there in one place. You've kind of had to like look on the internet in different places and look at different templates that people have on their Git repositories. So like having Rails bytes where you have everything in one place kind of helps with like learning new things from other people who make these templates.
Yeah, one of the most fun ones I had building was the PageM. Like it already does a little bit of stuff for you, like when you run like Rails install pay, but like having it interactively ask you for Stripe or Braintree and then setting up the gems that way. And I don't know, it just added like the finishing touch to make using something like pay like even more slick. So it was cool.
One of the things I think we discovered working on it was like you have dependencies that may or may not be installed, which there aren't really any helpers for. So for example, if you skipped installing Webpacker for some reason or whatever, then if you try and run a template that depends on that, you have to go write your template to be defensive about that. And I think those are some of the things that we'll end up developing like tools around that might even make it into Rails core, which would be really cool. But I think there's, and I know Andrew, you can probably talk to this, there's a lot of those examples in our templates so far that depend on certain assumptions that I think will, if it's a Rails version or something, I think we'll have to, you know, have some helpers around those.
Yeah. And like one example that comes to mind right off the bat is like installing things that depend on Webpacker. Like for example, React or Stimulus or Vue, like you need that installed and you can make an assumption that Webpacker is going to be there, but that may not always be true if you started the Rails app like by skipping Webpack or whatnot. So like you have to kind of code the bytes defensively to check or ask the user, like, would you like us to install Webpacker as well? Or like so forth. And those are the things that, like you were saying, we could build helpers for or work to get like things for checks of Rails versions into like Rails core would be really useful. Like action text, like you can't really use action text on Rails 5.2, but you may want to use the Rails bytes to do things on, you know, lower versions until you upgrade it or something.
Yeah, and I think too, like if you happen to run the Bootstrap one twice, you would get, you know, duplicate entries in your head for your style sheet tag or whatever. So we'll probably end up building other functionality there to look for, does the stuff that we're inserting already exist? That was another one that I noticed, like especially if you're testing, you don't want to have to create a new app every time and you're rerunning the script and you're getting duplicates here and there. And writing the templates, I think, is going to be it feels like there could be a better process for writing and testing templates. And maybe even, like, I think we talked briefly about what if we had a CI or something, you could write your template and test it. I think that'd be neat.
That would be really neat, especially to do things like show an example of how your template's going to run. If we had some kind of like CI to do that, we could like capture that output and stream it to the user and then like use that for other things we were thinking about. Like show exactly the end user what's going to happen before it happens.
Uh-oh, CI, my calling card.
That's what you're here for.
Yep. I do love a good CI adventure. One thing that I did want to bring up is that if you look across some of the templates that exist today, people are employing different methods for like adding a gem to the gem file. And I don't know if you guys could talk to this or what your thoughts around this are, but having like specific ways to do things or recommended practices, and then also like recommended or not recommended, but like almost like not premium is the wrong word, but maybe like this is like what you should go to if you wanted to install Stimulus Reflex, for instance. Like if the Stimulus Reflex team decided to have their own Rails bytes that they continually update and support, versus like I think there's at least two or three Rails bytes right now that will add Reflex for you, but they do like slightly different things.
Yeah, I think we've talked about having a verified, you know, account or template that, and we've got it set up too so that like they're attached to effectively a team. So you can have all of the maintainers of Stimulus Reflex maintain that. So it's already shared, which is nice and a step in the right direction, I think. Yeah, that I think will help a lot. What was your other point? I already lost it.
Yeah, that's because I combined two questions because I don't know. I've seen at least three or four different ways of adding a gem and then bundling installing.
Right. That's an interesting one because they provide a gem command, but I was dropping into just the shell and running bundle add because bundle add will set the version for the gem. But the gem command, I don't believe does. You have to hard code the version number, which I don't want to do. Like if you're installing a new gem like Stimulus Reflex, we don't want to have to go and update that every release you guys make. It should just always install the latest version. So that was the reason, like if you use bundle add, it will install the latest version and mark it with that version number in your gem file. So you won't get screwed over when version 4 or 5 comes out.
The other thing I've noticed is you can also use the bundle add command to specify groups. Like I've seen a lot of people use the like gem method and with the specific like development and test group, but you can technically use bundle add. And I think you can pass like -G and like the groups that you want it. And like, it'll do that too, which I found really neat. But then there's one other case and I forget everything, but there's sometimes when you install or run bundle add, not all the dependencies for the gems get like installed properly. So there's one command floating around and I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. I think the trussle byte uses it, but it's basically done that way so it will properly install dependencies for some gems. That's why there's a couple different ways floating around out there.
Yeah. There's also one of those commands doesn't support adding. Actually, Maybe most of them don't support doing the require false, which is interesting. The one, I don't know which Rails byte I saw that did this, but the one I basically, the method I've been using, and I think I've created like, I don't know, 10 Rails bytes at this point, is having a method called def do bundle. And then it does like bundler.with unbundled env run bundle install. So you bundle add the gem and then you run that after. But I don't know. That's what I was saying. If there was like a recommended way, that would be ideal.
Yeah, I think that's an area we want to improve documentation around. Like as we get better writing templates from just what we write, and like as we're learning from watching other people write it and use it, we can kind of see and be like, oh, people are having problems figuring out the proper way to bundle. So let's write some documentation around that. And like either try and get that upstreamed into the Rails guides, or like just put it on the sidebar, like where the list of commands we have are there.
Right.
You know,
you're talking about having a way to verify that your stuff does what you want it to. That was a problem I had, because instead of like doing it locally, I would just build it in Rails bytes and then pull it down. But the benefit to that is it padded my numbers pretty quickly. So I was one of the higher downloaded things at the time because I had installed it like 30 times. So yeah, do that with you will, but
I think I'm going to write something that when you change it from private to public, it resets the download counts, you know, because I noticed that too. No, I'm just kidding. But I noticed that too. So what I was doing when I was making my like bytes was I was doing them privately, and then I was using the fork functionality to make a copy, and then I would set that copy to public for everybody else, which is something you can do. If you find a byte that's like really close, like maybe I want to install Bootstrap, but like it's not quite there. Like it doesn't do everything I wanted it to do. So let's fork that, change it, and then I can use my forked version to install Bootstrap. So
yeah, the forking is like awesome. But the only worry of mine is that as this gets more popular, it's going to become overwhelming. If you have like 10 bytes that all install Bootstrap, but they all do like something slightly differently, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that will be something we'll have to figure out over time. But if you're counting them by, you know, if you're sorting the search results for Bootstrap by download count and stuff, you'll probably end up doing the same kind of thing you would do if you searched Ruby gems for a calendar or something like that. So, you know, we'll have to make sure we have ratings or upvotes or something that, you know, can help with that over time if things get to be too complicated. But for now, we probably won't worry a whole lot about that. I think comments will be the next key feature we probably add. But Andrew, I know that you saw the same tweet. It looked like Marco created a CLI gem for Rails bytes, which is really neat.
Yeah, that was, I think it's just a proof of concept right now, but it's something that like, when I saw that, I was like, whoa, that would actually be really cool for us to have. So that might be something we want to like look into, you know, once comments are done and we get a little bit further, maybe some better sorting in the app, like for example, by downloads and by likes and things like that.
Yeah, I talked to Marco about that because he sent it to me, and he created it into a gem. And shout out Marco, dude, I love that guy. he is always like coming in like whenever you need him with like awesome stuff, and he supports a lot of Ruby developers on GitHub sponsors. So great guy if you've never talked or interacted with him. But yeah, I showed it to him, and I actually told him I was going to bring it up to y'all, and I totally forgot. But the gem that he created to do it, it just hard codes the byte IDs right now, but that code is super clean. So I don't think it would be super, because you guys are using Jumpstart Pro, and doesn't Jumpstart Pro have like API keys out of the box?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's set up. I just recently, like I use Jumpstart Pro for App Locale, and I built some API stuff for that. So like, that's fresh on my brain, is like, it wouldn't be too hard to make an API for searching and then like, you know, installing with that. So seeing that he's got most of the code almost done with that makes it a lot easier to be like, oh, hey, let's take this, let's build on it, and let's make these API endpoints. So
do you guys know what tool he was using for building the interactive CLI stuff?
TTY.
Nice. Cause that,
yeah, because it's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Cause like, you know, it gives you a list of options and you can scroll through that with your arrow keys and whatever and select things. It was nice. And it printed out things in a really well formatted way, which I think is, you know, something that not all Ruby scripts do super well. And that was like really clean. And I want to take some time to learn how to use that too. Cause I was like, man, this is really slick. I definitely wrote my fair share of like rake tasks and things that were really ugly and tried to be a little interactive, but that looks like a tool that would be good to have in the wheelhouse.
Yeah. TTY is awesome. It is a kind of umbrella for many, many gems all by, and I don't even want to pronounce his name, but I think it's Pieter. I don't know. I can't pronounce his name, but he was the first person I sponsored on GitHub because he writes content about creating gems and really no one else does that I've seen recently. So yeah, the TTY gem family is really, really good. Way better than Thor.
You seem upset about Thor lately. You want to dive in on that? Like, do you want to relive those memories? No? Okay.
No.
We can move past this. About it. Okay.
Really just not overjoyed with Thor. And it's thanks to you. So thank you.
For anybody that doesn't know, Thor is what powers like the Rails app templates, the generators, what else? Probably quite a bit of stuff.
It's super useful. It just, I think, Andrew, your dispute with it is it's hard to test. Is that like...
And that's number one, but it's also hard to do. It's also hard to extend. I don't know. I just, I did not enjoy using it.
I kind of noticed that when I was putting together the gem for AppLocale. Is like, there wasn't a lot of like examples on the Thor documentation for what I wanted to use it like. So I kind of just had to like dig in and figure it out. And that was really frustrating. And it probably took me longer than like, if I just fell back to what is it in the Ruby, the like Ruby options or something that you can basically do a Ruby CLI just with Ruby itself and you don't need Thor. But I had an example working code with like Thor doing similar to what I wanted to do. So I was like, I'm just going to use this code because I'm a programmer who's lazy at heart and I just want to use an example code that's out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Thor, I think, is in generally what is most people are kind of doing when they're writing gems, or at least a lot of older gems all use Thor. So it's, I don't know, it's a great tool, but I think there's a lot better options and it's really frustrating to work with.
You know, the bright side about gems being open source is if you want to go in and change all of that, it's right there, Andrew. Like, I'm just saying.
I don't want to change it.
Just I would accept the pull request, you know? Like,
yeah. I already sent you one.
Actually, you've sent me a couple and they've been great.
Yeah, I'm what you call a savvy coder. Sometimes.
I'm only savvy on Thursdays. So
that's fair. It is Friday though. So Jason, you better pay very close attention to any PRs that come from him today.
Andrew's on vacation starting from this morning till like next week. So
actually, it's like next month. Actually, I'm like off until like June 1st. So it's fantastic.
So you guys, I was smitten with the idea, and I think I was on like a 10-hour car ride, and I think I saw the tweet from y'all, and I looked through it, and I was churning ideas while I was driving. But you guys let me come in and add a few things, and I actually started the comment functionality, so that should be coming if that code is up to par. Took a while to figure out Femera's nesting controller pattern.
I still don't understand this, Andrew. Like, it's just namespacing.
No, like, it's like, but you namespaced inside of like a namespace that I don't know. It was just funny.
Okay, I mean that endpoint is a little silly. Like, but either way, like namespacing is really useful when you have a large application or you work with a lot of people with different sections in an app. Yeah, it was funny. You said something to me in Slack the other day, like, are you a gopher because you sure like nesting things? And I just cracked me up laughing with like that comment.
yeah, my analogies are awesome and typically don't make sense. So I'm glad that one. I was like, how much do you like gophers? Because you sure seem like digging down into these controllers or something like that.
Yeah, it was just like, at first I didn't get it, but then when you said like why, I was just like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
I don't really like the analogy, but I do love how much you love your analogies. Like,
yes, I do.
I don't even remember the analogy at this point, but I just sit here chuckling at the fact of how proud you are. And that makes me proud of them.
No, they're so bad, but they're funny to me. So what else do you guys have ideas for? What are ways people can support the project or promote it?
Honestly, I think the best way to support it is probably to make some like Rails Bytes, try it out. And then if you have feedback on things that could be improved, tweet it our way. I mean, we'll have the Twitters, I'm sure, in the show notes probably, but, or you can find Chris and just tweet Chris. Like he's the popular guy, you know? Yeah. Just using it and like giving us feedback is a great way to support it.
Well, if Chris is so popular, then it sounds like we should be running all tech support your way. Because Chris is a busy guy.
I mean, sure.
But yeah, definitely send everything his way. Anything hard or technical, send it to Andrew.
that's fair. Yeah.
So one, we talked about this a little bit on the Ruby Blend today, which I guess will come out in like a week or two. And one point that Nate had, which I think was a good point to just like run through y'all's minds, is like, if I am using, like, I created a Vue component, Rails Byte. And have you guys given any thought, or is there any concern that if a developer comes along and tries to use this Rails Byte and it doesn't work, that failure will get pushed over to the Vue component library issues instead of like where it might ought to be?
That's definitely an interesting concern. I think once we add comments, it will probably help alleviate that, in the sense that you can say like, hey, this didn't work for me. Like, I ran into this issue. Like, and maybe we can make it clear on the page, and it's like, hey, if you're using this, report issues here in the comments, rather than going to the gem authors or whatnot. Because especially if it's not a verified thing, then like, we don't want to push that work onto the gym maintainers, because, you know, that's just not cool, right? So,
yeah, which is, I think, I also said that I think comments will kind of alleviate that, but it was a good like question that I thought was worth at least mentioning, that if you are using a Rails Byte and it doesn't work, don't go commenting on the gem repo, because that's not, like, they can't do anything about that. I mean, of the goodness of their heart, maybe they will help, but like they shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, things will get a little bit different if you have the gem maintainers also maintaining a Rails Byte to install their tool. If it's, you know, an unofficial one, then for sure, chances are the issues are probably with the Rails Byte that someone wrote, not as much with the, you know, library itself. But yeah. And man, one of the cool things someone suggested was like, you know, the deploy to Heroku buttons, basically like, you know, install with Rails Bytes button that you could drop in your README and, you know, have it configure Stimulus Reflex in your app or whatever in a single command, which would be kind of cool. So, you know, I think the hope is that gem authors start to maintain their own Rails Bytes, and then hopefully that alleviates some of the troubles there and doesn't, you know, cause them more issues.
Yeah, the deploy button is interesting. I was going to message on, I just forgot that it would be cool. Like, Andrew Famara has a gem for AppLocale, and he also has a Rails Byte that is attached to it. And it would be cool if there was like a badge you could put on your README or something that is like, I don't know, open in Rails Bytes, or just like have it copy the command or something.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Chances are, I would guess it would just have to take you to the Rails Byte, because we're not going to be able to do copy to clipboard in a GitHub README probably. But, you know, that would be simple enough. So yeah, it seems like it would be a really, really handy way to do things. And then it just makes, I think one of the things that I like about installing certain libraries like Passenger is that they have an interactive way of setting up that on your server, whereas Puma just like gives you a README and says, good luck, like go learn systemd or whatever. And we need more stuff that's friendly to beginners or even to, you know, experienced developers who just don't want to have to go look up the docs for the 1,000th time. And I think this really like bridges that gap nicely. So really would be my hope to get more people using it to install things. And, you know, we'll just have to go and start making Rails bytes for whatever gem. And this has been kind of fun because if there isn't a Rails byte for a library I want to install, I'm just going to start writing a Rails byte to do the, you know, gem install for me and then add any other extras to it. I think that'll be a really great way to start building out the library.
Yeah, that's what I did. I was creating a new app and I now have 10 Rails bytes just because like as I was like, oh, I want to add this gem. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm just going to add a Rails byte. And then by the time the Rails byte was done, I would just copy, paste, run it. And then I'm like, on to the next gem. Oh, I wonder if this Rails, nope. All right, new.
Yeah, and it's really cool to be able to do that. And then like I've done that a few times and then come back to my byte and been like, it would be really nice if it asked me if I wanted to do this. Because sometimes I want to, sometimes I don't. You know, like maybe that's install the device views. You know, sometimes you want to do that. Maybe you just want the defaults or whatever. So having the ability to go back and edit your Rails byte and then add those features and come back to it and make it more useful is really fun.
One of those things is like, I wonder if anybody's done a byte yet for like Cominari or Pagey for pagination. Like, and those would be interesting ones because don't they have like views helpers for like Bootstrap or whatnot out there? So like, those are the kind of like interactive bits that you can ask in these bytes and be like, hey, like, are you using Bootstrap? Would you like to use the Bootstrap views for Cominari or whatnot? Like those kind of like,
yeah, because
and those are the hard things that you have to go dig through the README and be like, okay, I'm using Bootstrap, but how do I get my pagination to look good because I, you know, I'm not a designer or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and like Pagey's modular enough that you install the gem, but that's not good enough. You have to like include the modules in your views and your controller. And I always forget to include one of those two, you know, and it's good to have a byte that just does the configuration there for you and then could say, well, do you want us to install views you can override? Do you want the Bootstrap ones? Okay, we'll install those or whatever. And, you know, I think that's going to save me countless, you know, hours once you, all these little things will add up so fast. And it seems like it makes things so friendly. Even if you've done this before, like I have to look up Pagey every single time I install it, you know, and want to customize it for Tailwind or whatever. So it's nice to have that potential there.
Andrew, you want to talk a little more about AppLocale, kind of how you got started on it, what it does, why it will change the world, things like that?
Well, to start it, I was really tired of using some like other apps to help to manage translations that we use at like work. And I was like, there has to be a better way, like, because the workflow that this other app uses is like, okay, you go find the translation key you need to edit, and then you put in your translation for English because you know English, if that's your language you speak, and then you're like, okay, well now I got to go edit it for all 19 other languages. Okay, so this one app, you have to go look up the key again. And then you're like, oh, well, I don't speak Spanish and I don't have the translation for Spanish off the top of my head. So I'm just going to go to Google Translate and get it close enough. And so I'm going to copy that and then I put it in that key. And then you just repeat that cycle. And I'm just like, okay, there has to be a better way to edit a translation key at one spot. Like if I'm editing a translation key that's like Hello World, for example, the really basic one, but you have to go find that key in each language and then go get the value from Google Translate. So I was like, okay, there's got to be a better way that you can just put a button to be like, go pre-fill this from Google Translate. And then it just fills the form, you click save, and then there you go. So that's like, that's why I did it. And then as I've been building it out, I've been thinking like, okay, that's really cool. I've got the web interface, and now you can download it with a zip file and, you know, put it in your code. And then somebody was like, why don't you have like a rake task that we can drop into our app or like a gem? And I was like, yeah, that's actually brilliant. And then once I finished the Ruby gem, I was like, okay, this is like really good, because I can make a change in the web app with my translations, like get a new translation for Spanish or German or French or whatnot. And then with one command, I can have that translation ready for me to commit and push to the app. Yeah, I wanted a better workflow for managing translations. And I wanted to like reduce the friction for developers to localize their apps into other languages. Because when you localize your app, you reach more people.
Yeah, it's kind of an accessibility concern. If your app is only translated into English, less than 20% of the world can speak English, then like 80% of the world can't really, I mean, they can use your app, but like they're going to have to try to like use the, like translate, like some web browsers will automatically try to translate the page, some don't. And then I had someone today was like, well, my company's only US based, so that doesn't matter. And I was like, well, not everyone in the US speaks English. So, you know, it's a concern that you probably should think about. And it's definitely, I like the workflow of like you're using translations in your views and then the actual copy is in your n.yml and the associated languages.
I did that in Field Help, not because like I had planned to translate it out of the gate, but because I almost feel like borderline dirty for some reason when I hard code like a notice in, like it's just a string. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but
it feels like you're gonna like, and I do this in all of my apps. Like I did it while I was building App Locale. So now I have to go, like, it's kind of embarrassing to build an app to help you manage translations. And because I didn't have the app, I didn't set up my app for localization. So now I have to go back and I have to take every hard-coded string in my app and then convert it into a YAML key value and then do that. But I'm kind of patting myself on the back there because like with my gem, I did that from like my nav bar and it was like super quick for me to like make the YAML key and put it in the shared nav bar partial file and then go pull the translation files or the translation keys down from my app for every single language I'm going to support off the bat. So it was like, okay, this reduces that part of the workflow that's like, you're going to have to go hard code, like take out hard coded strings and put them into a translation key in your ENYML file. But at least you can make it super quick for you to pull other languages in and get a value that's probably good enough for somebody to figure out what you're meaning there. And then, of course, like Google Translate or Microsoft Translate's not perfect. So like when you have a lovely customer that's like, hey, this isn't quite right, you should probably say it like this. You can just go in into App Locale, update it, and then pull it down into your app and you've fixed the translation. So
a VS Code extension to help with I18N. So you folks may want to check that out. I don't remember the name. So Rails I18N, just look it up in there. It would also be cool if you could like crowdsource like suggested translation changes in App Locale. That was something Nate said.
That would be really cool. Like be like, hey, I don't know exactly what is like, what's the proper term for account settings in every language or something like that. But like, here's what, you know, 150 other projects say works for them or something like that. But then that gets into an interesting thing of like, I don't necessarily want to just share translation information from other projects with other people. And so like the part of me is like, maybe we'll shy away from that and just be like, hey, this is just for your project to manage or your team to manage your projects. Because that feels kind of like you can get into some nitty gritty stuff there. And I just, you know, I want to keep privacy and concern, you know, like, hey, your translations are your translations. I'm not going to read them, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think his idea was more so like at CodeFund, our app is open source. So all the strings are on GitHub. So if we were using App Locale and we wanted to be able to like crowdsource, like we could turn our, I don't know, like change a setting on App Locale so that people could come in and comment or upvote or, I don't know, suggest changes or however that workflow might appear.
Ooh, that's a really good one.
That's why Nate gets paid the big bucks.
Yeah, Nate's like a genius. I got to figure out a better review process as well. Like one of the things that concerns me is not being able to kind of audit what changed and by who. So that's something I'm going to be working on eventually of supporting and saying like, hey, and then I've got this ideal that I've kind of talked about with, I think each of you at one point in time is like, I want to eventually support automated pull requests, kind of like Dependabot or the other dependency managers. And that's where I'd really like to shine and be able to say like, hey, this translation key changed from hello world to hey everybody or something like that. And it was done by who, and maybe there's a comment for the change and stuff like that. But those are kind of the intricacies that you end up needing to build when you start having a lot of users or a lot of like translators on your team. And for like, I'm not there yet with like my users. Nobody's really requested that. So I'm not necessarily sure I'm going to build something until I know it's needed.
True senior developer statement right there, folks. I'm not building it until people want it.
Well, until enough people want it, I think is the, right. the true statement there, right?
Well, anything else we want to chat about before we wrap up today?
I don't think so.
Oh, I thought you raised your hand like you were like,
should we plug Hatchbox? I mean, I think that's a thing in all the previous podcasts I've been listening to is a plug of Hatchbox. No, but you should always check out Hatchbox. You know?
Oh, yes.
Hatchbox, that's super sick. Get my Rails app online and still be able to customize it thing. That sounds cool.
Cool. I have lots of stimulus reflex things to talk about, but I would like to do a whole episode with Nate here about reflex.
We talked about that a little bit on the Ruby Blend today, and I think Nate's opinion of you as a developer has hit some major stonks.
I don't know. What was,
I think let me rephrase for the boomers. I think Nate's opinion of you as a coder has skyrocketed because whatever the stuff you added on Reflex was going to be a major help. And you've also, I just want to thank you right now, you've created a massive amount of refactoring work for me to do that I'm just super overjoyed to do. But on the actual note, it's going to allow us to alleviate like some really complicated things that we're doing to kind of do that. So
is it the nested attribute stuff?
Well, specifically the form serialization.
Yeah. Yeah. That Nate showed me how y'all were doing that. And
it's screwy.
The problem was technically we couldn't implement it because we didn't have access to sessions because we're still in cookie store land. So it was actually all the things that, all the like technical reasons we couldn't is why I came up with the other thing. But we can chat about that more later. That's good to know, yep. though.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Andrew, do you want to maybe explain why you're better than Andrew Mason and vice versa before we call it quits? I know there's this weird tension between y'all. Where one's tension. Always trying to prove they're the better Andrew.
I mean, Andrew Mason can say what he wants to say. I don't need to say anything here, so Dang. I'll just...
Oh, my Dang. God. Oh, my God. You know what? I'm the better Andrew because I don't say stuff like that. That's just... There's nothing I can reply to that. You just boxed me in.
Ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case.
You know what? I'm done here.
Samira, thanks for joining us, though.
I mean, thanks for having me. It was like I was hanging out with my three best friends, you know?
I was going to say, we're all friends. So if you ever want to just come hang out with us, like just tell us. We're around. Yeah. We're hanging out.
I'll say one last thing. I'd love to have any feedback anybody might have on Rails Bytes or App Locale. Just shoot me a DM on Twitter or something and we can go from there.
What's your username on Twitter?
It's @AndrewFromera. So just first name and last name.
Cool. All right. I guess we'll talk to you guys next week.
Sounds good. We'll see you.
See ya.
This podcast is brought to you by our friends at Linode. With 11 data centers worldwide, including their newest data center in Sydney, Australia, enterprise-grade hardware, S3-compatible storage option, and their next-generation network, Linode delivers the performance you expect at a price that you don't. Get started on Linode today by going to linode.com/remoteruby.